Ricardo.
All right, everyone, welcome to a brand new edition of the Swift Kicks podcast. I'm Alex, and with me, as always, are Ben and Steve. Before we get started, we ask that you like and subscribe to this podcast. Share it with anyone you know who loves the beautiful game. So to get started today, it's the week we've waited a year for. Euro 2020 is now Euro 2021, kicking off Friday, June 11th in Rome. Got Italy versus Turkey. So much to look forward to there. Unfortunately, not for Trent Alexander-Arnold, though. Spent about 20 hours on the England national team, and now he's gone. We're going to get into that, but quickly, David De Gea blew it for Man United in the Europa League. Chelsea made Christian Pulisic the first American to win a Champions League. And Eddie, how are you going to do me like this? Didn't even get a day job at Celtic, but he's quit it already, and he's desperately trying to get a job at Everton now. So, Steve, we're going to let you rant about that for about 2 minutes, and then we're going to get into the other news.
I'll start the timer because I don't know if I can. I can rant for way longer than 2 minutes.
Starting timer.
I don't know how you can not get the job but still be public enemy number one. I don't know how you can. I don't know how that's possible. But
catfished.
Yeah. So in spectacular fashion, Eddie Howe has not managed to secure the job at Celtic Park, and Pasta man from Australia.
There we go. We've got the nickname.
Pastaglu. Sorry about the pronunciation, but I've never heard of this man once in my life prior to these headlines. So I think you can understand. Yeah, Eddie Howe is not taking the role at Parkhead. Or rumors say that the backroom staff that he was looking to take with him to Glasgow. He was waiting for their season to conclude because the backroom staff were employed at Bournemouth, and he was waiting for the season to finish before they could, you know, make a say on that. Well, the season ended, and for what reason? I don't know. It was money. It was probably money. Backroom staff said no, so Eddie Howe said no, and now we are left looking. I don't know how it's possible, but even sillier than what we. Than how we looked when we ended the season, and this Postecoglou guy from Australia, who has managed the Australian national team, the Socceroos. He has also managed most recently the Mineiros, the J Mineiros, something like that. I don't even remember.
Yeah,
they did win the J League. They just won it, so that's a plus.
Suffering from success.
Yeah, I suppose. It's unreal. It's unreal. It's as to how horrible it looked in the press. It just to everything. No matter which way you looked at it, this was a fail. This was a fail from every angle that you looked at this from a Celtic standpoint. Absolute fail.
And from what I understand, like it happened, basically you guys had already started putting out season tickets and tried basically baiting the fans.
Yeah, that was another thing that didn't go down so well was that Celtic like PR and like social media, they were coming out saying that they had like, you know, news coming out soon. And we've been talking about Eddie Howe for what it feels like since I was in grade school.
Which was 2 weeks ago. That right. Explains the 2 weeks that we were off. Steve had to graduate. So.
Right. So it's true. But the Celtic fan base was under the impression that they were going to be announcing Eddie Howe as the manager. So with this like almost like incentive or this like boost to morale, people were, once season tickets for the next season started going on sale, people started buying them. I don't know how in mass, but I would imagine that sales were boosted by the impression that Eddie Howe was going to be announced. And then a few days, I don't know how many days, but a few days after they had been live and sales have been going on, they come out and say, hey, by the way, this ain't happening. He ain't coming. The guy that we all thought promised all these things, he's not coming. And it just completely blew up in their face. And it kind of felt like you kind of got done dirty by Celtic, to be honest. If I was someone who was buying tickets with the impression of like, you know, this is going to be a turnaround season, to have that just like dashed away from you in such a like spectacular fashion.
So are you saying you're not a fan unless they get a good coach?
Not what I'm saying, but I could imagine that some fans who are putting money to buy in these season tickets and maybe are buying their first season ticket or buying whatever merch, whatever product that Celtic is selling. If they're buying these things with the impression that, you know, Celtic have a signal of intent in getting Eddie Howe, are going to be announcing him. This is going to be the season that we push back to reclaim what's ours. And then that happens after things have been on sale for a bit.
You think Eddie Howe was going to do all those things?
I'm just saying people are, I think they had unrealistic expectations. I think it was a joke that we were considering that he had the job and he never had the job. But I think a lot of people were had all these hopes and dreams pinned on Eddie Howe.
I just don't know why it's not someone else now. Like, just because it's not Eddie Howe doesn't mean season ticket holders aren't going to be season ticket holders.
Right. No, I'm not saying that they're not going to be. I think the appeal of Eddie Howe was, I think, one, he's British. Two, he has Premier League managerial experience, recent Premier League managerial experience. And he played relatively attractive football at times. And I think people were excited about that. Having a manager come in, well, he's not come in yet. We're not counting those chickens before they hatch. This Postecoglou, like once that name was announced, you should the social media, not uproar, but just the reaction of like who is this?
It went
man?
From how to who?
Right, exactly. Right, exactly. Exactly. And it was just could have been handled a lot better. We'll say that much.
All right, Ben.
That wasn't 2 minutes, but
no, it wasn't 2 minutes, but that's what she said. Ben, the Europa League. What happened there?
Man United put way too much pressure in a goalkeeper that they have like publicly flocked all season. You know what I mean? Like poor De Gea, right? Like poor De Gea, poor De Gea, poor De Gea. I think you should never come down to PKs. United kind of were lulled through the first half, came back, fought pretty well through the second half, but what a PK shootout, right? Like, I don't think I've seen a longer,
good Lord. Yeah.
That longer was PK shootout of that in my lifetime. Yeah. But you know, it did get to a place where like, all right, you've got this guy who's been benched, who's in my opinion, one of the best keepers in the world. And you've shown him that you really don't back him. You don't trust him. You've lost your starting spot. And then, you know, the biggest stage came across and he delivered. You know what I mean? And Sir Alex Ferguson was the first to put his arm around him after the game and be like, come here, kid. You know what I mean? Like these things happen. You win with a player and you lose with a player. But unfortunately, for me, it's called the crows coming to roost or chickens coming to roost or whatever it's called. I can't remember.
I get what you're saying.
It's bollocks either way. The real problem for me is I think United have a Harry Maguire issue without Harry Maguire on the side. Harry Maguire has made United so much stronger and it takes him getting injured for us to see it. And, you know, I might even go as far as to say his playing time might be slightly mismanaged this year to the point that he couldn't make it through the whole season without picking up an injury. And I think it was just overuse. Exciting for United with how they finished the season. With this one loss is kind of a tarnish on the whole season, in my opinion, because you want to win those games.
Right.
You need to win those games. I mean, they're definitely absolutely the Champions League next year. But I think it was just proving a lot of people very, very right that United, while they are good, they are returning to form. They're definitely significantly further along than they were. Not being able to beat a team like Villarreal in clutch moments is a problem. You know, because those are the games you got to win if you want to return to greatness.
Unai Emery, you know, is Europa League greatness. I mean,
I was going to say, like, Arsenal are just absolutely kicking themselves right now, right? Like, is on a mission. He's no joke.
One thing to look out for Man United, though, Ben. Sources telling ESPN that Cristiano Ronaldo is now checking the transfer interest.
So you're saying he's available?
So what does that mean? What does that mean?
You're just putting out a vibe.
Yeah, he slid into the DMs. Okay. He sent that late night text to let, hey, you up? And United is always up for Cristiano Ronaldo. Like, let's throw that out there.
Do you think all Solskjaer sleeps?
Upside down, maybe? I don't know. Like a bat.
I just had that image in my head and it fit too well.
It does. It's got the eyes of a bat. How have we not made that connection? Dude, I'm here for it. I think that's the farewell tour the people deserve. Juventus and him, I think, have had a falling out. Mm-hmm. I think that would I don't think he's the answer to Man United's problems. If anything, what you could end up doing by bringing Ronaldo in is bring the biggest ego in sports into a you know, a training ground that's been rebuilt and made so much progress.
We're bringing Zlats back?
No, I think
that's the biggest ego in sports.
Yeah, but Zlatan, I feel like, at least owns it, which is a little bit more easy to swallow than some of the other players. But, dude, I'm here for it. I think it's where we want to see him go. I'm sure you guys would be here for it too.
Yeah,
I know you'd prefer you go to Newcastle, Alex, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, you know, if Steve Bruce has his way.
yeah, well, not Neymar. So
right, exactly.
No, it's
little old for Bruce.
It's super frustrating, but it's also, I will say to a lot of the fans that are newer to the game that do follow Man United like myself, what you got to remember is United are currently investing in their youth. They're actively investing in their youth. I think they had more like 19 and 20 year old players than any other team. Mm-hmm. So seeing where they go in the next few years is going to be exciting. But again, super frustrating for the short term. I also think Dean Henderson is trash. Like, I'm just putting that out there.
There you go.
Dean Henderson backs himself to have saved those penalties, though.
Yeah, who says that?
Yeah, that was some wild stuff, man.
What happened? Tell the people. People want to know.
So at the end of that, so the Europa League final, in which 21 PKs consecutively were scored, and the last one that wasn't saved was David De Gea, who was in net. And for the record, David De Gea has not saved a penalty in 5 years. And Man United were making subs deep into extra time, so they had the subs available. So the it wasn't like they were used up and they had set in stone what they had. They could have made the change had they thought that the change was needed. And Dean Henderson, after the game, comes out. I don't know in what platform. I forget what platform. If it was like an interview, if it was like on a social media, or whatever. But he was like, just irate that he wasn't elected to start, or even so elected to like subbed in, because I don't know what his record is in saving pens, to be honest, but apparently he backed himself enough to come out publicly about it. So
the thing with that is, like, that's, you almost want that from your keeper, right? Like, you don't want a keeper that doesn't think they're gonna win that game, you know what I mean? You want a certain element of confidence, but for me it's just such a fresh wound. Like, dude, you know they're, like, sending this guy out. It's very clear that De Gea is on his way out. Like, they've benched him for you. They've stuck to their guns and played him in Europe, you in the Prem. Take a chill pill, man. Like, we all want to win, but, like, be there for your team. It doesn't make sense to me. I hope they trade him for that. That alone. Just give him away for free. Don't care. Not a problem. Also, probably would have botched some of the great saves De Gea saved in the game. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
6-1 half.
Yeah, it's impossible to say.
Yeah.
No, it's possible. I'll say it right now.
No, it's possible.
You also had Chelsea winning the Champions League.
Who?
Wasn't much of a game, though, I felt like. I felt like City didn't show up for it. And Kevin De Bruyne, injured, might have to miss the first game of the Euros coming up. Because of it.
Face punched in.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, all in all, decent end to a, I guess, league season, you know, club season there. Kristen Pulisic almost scored, became the first American to win the Champions League, then went on to do some pretty big things against Mexico in a game that we're not even going to attempt to describe what it meant, what it was for. But what did happen is,
it was eventful, though.
Yeah, a good 3-2 win in double overtime, two PKs to close things out, save at the end, a couple beer bottles as well thrown at some players. Not great things there, but, you know, at least fans are in the stands, I guess.
Yeah.
No, can you pause? I think that's interesting, right? Mm. So you've seen all the players protesting on Twitter. Yeah. Having like social media blackouts, and it looks like UEFA, FIFA, and all the big soccer, you know, gods is what I'm gonna refer to them as, are trying and attempting to do something. And I have a feeling it is going to absolutely ruin the World Cup. or Euros. So like the way it works, Steve, did you see this?
No, you're losing me here. I'm waiting for the explanation.
So they paused the game yesterday because there were some homophobic chants and the referees stopped the game. And at first I was like, what are they doing? Mm-hmm. And then like they explained it a little bit, but the way it works is they pause the game where you are. It was like the 89th minute. They pull everyone into the center. They explain to both teams what's going on. They make some PA announcements in the stadiums about addressing the chants that are going on, trying to correct it. If it continues or happens again after that, they go into like a 40-minute recess. And then if they come back out and there's any other incidents, the game is then postponed to the next day and played behind closed doors. Pretty much the challenge, if you will, is going to be stopping a team that's losing late in a game from just screwing up a game.
It is interesting. And what was more interesting to me is that, so to your point about Euros, there's usually better, I guess, stewardship of the stadiums in Europe, where they will purposefully separate fans from countries or clubs. Whereas it seemed last night, there were fans from both sides. Everybody was just sort of intermixed with each other. You know, you buy your ticket, you can sit wherever you want kind of deal. And that's more of an American thing anyway. Nobody really thinks about like this sort of erupting or happening, but it's something that happens in, you know, the passions of, okay, homophobic slurs should never happen. But, you know, chants and things like that do happen. Sometimes passions get a little, you know, heated and flare up. But it's just not addressed in the American stadiums as I think that it might be in the Euro stadiums. There are a lot of places that these games are going to be played coming up this summer across Europe. And some of those places are in, we'll say, sort of Eastern Europe, where there have been issues with troubles that happened in Denver that have happened elsewhere. But for the most part, I think, you know, a lot of that will be quashed throughout Euros, but it is an interesting thing maybe that will be addressed, you know, going forward with the U.S. men's national team, because it's not like really the first time that this has happened. I mean, I remember in like 2004 in L.A. where like Mexican fans chanted Osama and it was like there's no player called Osama, you know what I mean? So it's, and you know, not just pick on them. I'm sure U.S. fans have had our own chance, but you know what I mean? Like, it just feels like there's more separation in Europe than there is.
In like 2008, 2009, West Ham had a preseason game against Chicago Fire.
Yeah.
And they intermingled those fans. And you got to think, West Ham fans that are traveling with West Ham aren't like, they're not super teams, right?
Yeah. Your traveling fans are your diehards.
Yeah. It's not like us going to old, watch Man United play Real Madrid at the Big House.
Yeah.
I remember
very different.
The fans different. Just kicked the crap out of the Chicago Fire fans.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And I remember like our first MLS game we went to together, Alex, the firm they had that was like walking down the street chanting would probably be set on fire if they tried that in England.
Yeah.
And I don't know how else to put it, man. You can't do that. You know what I mean? Like for me, the difference is in the States, it's okay to talk trash. Mm-hmm. Everywhere else in the world, it's a different animal and it requires action. So if you go up to someone in a group of people just chanting how tough you are, you better be ready to go because that's how it is. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, but you know, I think it was nice to see that the game's trying to adapt to address some of these issues. They're going to miss stuff, but it's better than doing nothing, right? They got to do something.
Yeah. And it's not the first time that this has happened against the U.S. team, homophobic chants. I mean, it wasn't even a chant. I remember, I think it was last summer, there was a game, I think down in maybe Jamaica or something. And there was like some sort of comment made to one of the players. And then Landon Donovan, of all people, was like, I guess on the coaching staff or something. And he had to step in and be like, no, like, I know what that means. Like, you know, you can't let them say that kind of stuff. So I think it's something that's probably a fight that CONCACAF is going to have to figure that out. But yeah, part of it, I think, too, is just the stadium seating. It can't be as intermingled as it was. for something of that caliber. We already know that Mexico USA is always, you know, it's always built up as the big game of the region. So there should be the precautions in place for it as well. So, but
I would also like to just touch on the fact that US soccer versus Mexican soccer last night was terrible. It was not a high level of football. Like five goals scored between two high level teams is never a great sign, but like both teams could not play the ball out of their back line.
Yeah.
And like they couldn't clear their back third without turning it over every other time, and it really punished them.
Yeah.
I mean, minus the PK. And you know what? The U.S. are starting to have some like headliner names. You know what I mean?
Pulisic, I was just going to say Weston McKennie. We were texted, looked exactly like Cristiano Ronaldo jumping up for every corner to win the balls, win the headers. Same Tyler style. Adams. Yep. Tyler Adams as well. Like
there's a lot of these people that are playing like high level football, like year round. Zach Steffen, he's over at City.
Yeah.
The list goes on. I mean, John Brooks has been kicking it in Europe for like, I swear, almost 10 years now.
Brooks looked terrible. I'm just throwing that out there. Brooks does not look good.
I didn't watch the game. I'm just thinking of like European, like.
He couldn't like even watch Americans. Pulisic's PK when he took it. I'm really? Like, come on, man. Like, it's not like the World Cup final. Like, it's like just a PK. Yeah, it was. What's Ethan Horvath as well? I think he plays over. He play in Germany. Oh, Club Brugge. He plays in Belgium. So, you know, not quite top five Europe, but, you know, he's getting good playing time overseas and stuff. So there's definitely some stuff to look forward to from that game that, you know, you can go ahead and go forward. I guess it's the hexagon for CONCACAF that they'd use to qualify for the World Cup. I mean, we talked about how the youth team didn't qualify for the Olympics, which is a travesty. So maybe the adult team can actually do something here, but that's something to talk about in the upcoming weeks. Right now though, we got Euros, a lot of it resting on the shoulders of England, I think mainly because the semis, I think some of the quarterfinals and the final are all in England, all going to be played at Wembley. But there's also a good number of games. As I said, the first game's out in Rome with Italy and Turkey. And then there's a number of games around the rest of Europe. It should be a pretty fun tournament. Ben, what are you looking forward to?
Football in the summer.
Yeah.
Football in the summer. Yeah. No, I am ecstatic that England somehow are favored to win it, which means it is a death sentence out of the group stage for England.
Yeah.
Like they're absolutely screwed. I'm, you know, understandably really excited about watching England, but I'm also excited to talk about, you know, who I think the dark horse is going to be in Scotland. I think it's going to be a good level of football. I think it's really going to be interesting because the time difference is going to be kind of wacky, right? Like certain group, like what is England in Group D? Their games are going to be, you know, based on England's time. And then you got games. What's the furthest east they go? I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Let's say Eastern Poland or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have a huge time difference in some of those games. And I think it, to be frank, I think it creates kind of an unfair schedule, if you will. Like Group D is playing most of their games in England. If Scotland and England make it out of their group, or Croatia, the Czech Republic, their home base is where they're acclimated to. And I think that kind of helps them a little bit.
I would say, I think Baku in Azerbaijan is 4 hours ahead of London time. The only other one I could think of, they're playing in like St. Petersburg in Russia.
Playing St. Okay. I was thinking like Farsi's probably like Kiev, maybe.
Yeah. But that's only 3 hours ahead of Greenwich Mean Time. So to your point, it's some of those teams are going to be playing in a sort of a different world almost, you know?
I mean, if just looking at this though, right? Like the unique year, first off, they're not renaming it. They're keeping 2020, Euro 2020, which is funny.
Right.
That's interesting.
But do you think like if you're Gareth Southgate, just because that's the only international coach I can think of right now, you're Gareth Southgate, right? Like, is this your World Cup team? Like, is this the squad you're taking to the World Cup? You might make one or two tweaks, but like, this is really going to be a way to play with it. And granted, all the teams playing in Euros have that same advantage.
Yeah.
But this could be your your World Cup squad, right? Like, England looked like they're firing on all cylinders. It's going to be the most attacking England side ever seen. They're taking like four midfielders, which means they can't play anything other than the 4-3-3.
And four right backs.
Right. No idea what they're doing.
Dude, we're in an era of like right back, like full backs are wide midfielders now. And yeah. It's almost like the same thing as like a winger. A winger is also a wide midfielder and a fullback is a wide midfielder, but there's no like out and out wide midfielders now.
Yeah.
It's a strange time.
Yeah. I do want to do a quick plug if I can, on facebook.com/SwiftKicksPodcast. Pinned at the top is a link to like a pick'em bracket. If you guys want to join, test yourself against us. If not, it'll just be the three of us, and we'll, you know, it'll be our trash takes going forward through the summer.
I'll just trash you guys the whole time.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. But yeah, to your point, Steve, I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see sort of the style of play that comes out. I feel like the Euro tournament, I don't know if you've seen a couple, but they always seem to me to be much quicker play than the World Cup. I don't know how that. Maybe it's just because with the World Cup, you get different, you know, nations from different continents and stuff, different styles of play that way. But I feel like the European style is to always just come quick and fast at each other. And it opens up the game a lot more. And you see weird things happen, like Portugal winning, you know, Euros, going up against Greece, you know, in one of the tournaments. Like, it's just strange things can happen where you're not always going to see like a Germany or France, you know, just waltz through to the final almost. So it'll be interesting for me to see that.
Who's in Portugal's group? Is that the group of death this year?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's Portugal,
France,
it's
Portugal, Germany.
France, Germany, and Hungary.
Yeah.
Poor Hungary.
Yeah.
Well, so Steve and I were talking. There's an interesting dynamic, I think, because they added, I think, a couple more teams. So obviously the top two from each group automatically go through to the next round. And then it's the top four of the third place teams that also get sort of like saved, like an extra life, and they get to go through as well in this tournament. So it's not all doom and gloom if you come third place. So everything to play for Hungary there, everything probably to play for mm-hmm. England. places like Wales, you know, Austria, I could see kind of getting through on that kind of rule. Could be a boon for Scotland as well.
If Hungary was to pick one of those teams from the group of death, which one do you think it'd be?
Portugal.
If they were to beat one of the teams?
If they were to beat one of them teams to third place, which one do you think it would be? I think I'm with Ben as well. Portugal's my vote.
Can you explain the third place thing again?
So top two from each group go through automatically.
Yep.
And then there's a third place team. So there's six groups. The top four of the six third place teams also go through.
It's gonna be like a six-way tie.
Well, I'm sure it comes down to goals for, goals allowed, you know, all that kind of stuff.
It's gonna be a tie. That's gonna be a problem. I'm just throwing that out. There's gonna be a weird playoff game or a coin flip.
Oh, it's gonna be a coin flip. Yeah,
that will be how England get through. That will be the most stressful thing.
Right? We're gonna like tie Croatia, lose to Scotland, maybe beat Czech Republic and get through it in third place.
I think most of the groups are pretty fairly like competitive though. Like, yes, that's the group of, but like even looking at like Group B, you got Belgium, Denmark, Russia, and Finland.
Mm-hmm. I think Denmark could do well, to be honest.
They normally do. They show up.
Yeah, they're usually pretty good, but Russia's also pretty good.
Yep.
Right. It's all the steroids because they cheat. But like, that's besides the point, right? Like,
yeah. Ipso facto.
Conversation. Yeah. And then, you know, looking at Group C, Netherlands, Ukraine, Austria, Macedonia. Netherlands should take that. But Netherlands' current form, they're losing a lot of friendlies. And I think, honestly, Ukraine and Austria could compete there. North Macedonia, they might score an own goal or two. Who knows? But England are definitely not in an easy group. England, Scotland, Croatia, and the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
That might as well be the group of death as well. Like, I don't see too much of a difference between England and Scotland, if I'm being honest.
Well, you would imagine, you would think on paper that England would go through, but
why though? Like, if why? You look at the because players,
you look at the play, yeah, look at the players.
Pull it out.
I mean, there's Scott Dean Henderson.
I'm just looking at like I'm looking at the sums that those England players go for. Jadon Sancho, Harry Kane, Raheem Sterling, all these players, not one of those Scottish players would be going for fees like that.
Scott McTominay.
He don't go for more than, what, 40?
Because of his position.
I don't know. I just don't. I mean, I'm back in Scotland. Don't get me wrong. But I, in terms of evenly matched, I don't know. Can Scotland beat England? Yeah, I think so. But like on a consistent
based on
basis,
what?
We got Scotland's got Newcastle United's very own Ryan Fraser. Probably hasn't played a game.
I don't even know who that is, but I'm backing it.
Probably hasn't played a game in 9 months.
It'll be an interesting matchup to see. There's so many games that I'm just super excited to be watching. I honestly cannot wait for this tournament.
Alex, who are you taking? Who's winning this? Let's go right now. Trash takes. Boom. Who are you taking?
Overall, winning the entire tournament, you know, in my pick'ems, I have England-Germany final, and I have England winning it.
Love it. Love it. Gets in.
I'd probably say France.
Oh, would you?
I probably would.
Is that because Martial's in the squad?
Karim Benzema's back into the fold, baby.
He won't play over Martial, though.
I am disregarding what you've just said and moving on.
Maybe he'll blackmail the refs as much as he blackmails his teammates.
What happened with that?
That was dismissed. I think his trial, I think, is in October.
Actually, Steve, can you just give us a recap of that? Because at first, what was said was very confusing to me. And I think
there was, I'm going to try and break this down in as few sentences as possible. Matthew Valbuena, then teammate, then French international teammate of Karim Benzema, had a sex tape released to the public. And I don't know if Benzema offered to, he was being held ransom for the video. And I don't know if Benzema was like, kind of like, hey, you should probably pay them. Or like, hey, I don't know if he said like, I can make this worse or something. I don't know what it was like, but it was, like, Benzema didn't help the cause here. And
let me just jump in real quick, Steve, because this is all alluding from a text that I got from Steve one like Monday morning at 6:30. Benzema sex tape. All right, like just throwing that out there. People don't know what you're talking about, Steve.
Yeah, no, it's Matthew Valbuena, not Benzema.
But what is it?
What do you mean? I don't understand the question.
You just so Matthew Valbuena, right?
Right.
Had a sex tape with a girl.
Correct.
And Benzema got a hold of it.
Yeah, and it was almost like he was holding it ransom type of thing.
Okay, that makes sense. What doesn't well,
like,
make
not,
sense?
Not him directly, but it was like Benzema's people.
Right. It sounded more like there was a sex tape of Benzema and Valbuena.
Oh, no. Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Either way, he's on the French national team again. And
he's back.
Yeah, he had been exiled from the French national team since, I think, 2015.
Yeah.
And very, very rapidly just like came back into the fold. Like, I swear there's like a headline when like Deschamps was like, yeah, Benz was being considered for the national team. Like the next day he was in the camp, like starting. It was weird. But and then like another headline came out the next day. Matthew Valbuena was like, no, I didn't know this was happening. Like, it was weird.
Do you think he just forgot about Benzema and was like, oh, hang on, let's get this.
Something happened. Something made him change his mind. I mean, it's like Benzema's been in good form, but Benzema's been had good form for a while. So I don't know what something happened to happen in the back room. Like whether, I don't know if it was like the French Football Federation was like, hey, we kind of need to play this guy now. Or like, I don't know who made that call, but he's here now.
What do you guys make of Spain? Do you think they'll have any shot at anything? No Real Madrid players, no Sergio Ramos.
Sergio Busquets just was tested positive with COVID, so I don't think he's going to be. Well, I don't know for how long, but yesterday, as of the day we were recording this, he did test positive, so he is going to be at least missing a game or so. I don't know. I think Spain's They're a bit in a transition period. They got a lot of the old guard still there, and they have like new blood kind of coming in, but it doesn't seem like a nice gelling, you know? It doesn't seem like it's, at least that's from my perspective.
Yeah, they kind of remind me a lot of France when Henri was out of the picture. You know what I'm talking about? And
yeah, that was a rough time for them.
A couple of years. But that being said, with the pressure off of them, Luis Enrique is out in the press saying they can absolutely win Euros, but there's a lot of pessimism around them. And I feel like those big powerhouse countries do better when the press is against them to start with.
Yeah.
Because it's expected of them to lose.
Yeah.
But that's funny you bring that up, because I was looking at them in Italy and being like, I feel like one of these guys could surprise us, because they're always great. You know what I mean? They're good for at least a couple of wins.
Oh, Italy is the most beautiful drama of a team, right? Like, they're all either like crashing out in round one, or they're getting through to the semifinals and going out on PKs, or, you know, something like that. Something is always just like, they always have one amazing night. Like, they're fun to watch for sure. Another team, Belgium, you know,
Germany.
Who? Germany? Yeah, well, yeah, Germany. Just
one I forgot to think about was Belgium. Belgium could do some, I mean.
Right. Well, Belgium, you know, no longer is the dark horse that they were. I think they're a known entity. We talked about De Bruyne missing one game, but okay, you know, come back for the rest of them. He'll be fine. And they've got such, you know, the rest of the team, I think, is, I think, well in form right now. They could do
Lukaku
pretty well.
Lukaku is one of the most sought-after players right now.
Yes.
Yeah, he just had a great season out in Italy. Like, he's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and I think it would be fools to pass up Germany. I think Germany is always dangerous. There's nothing you can do about it, right?
Well, like, sure.
They just had a casual 11-1 win in a warm-up game against Latvia. So things are going well.
Like, they were just like, hey, 10 or die. Like, there's no reason we're not winning by 10.
Right. They were told by their coach that they had to do a lot of sprints if they didn't score more than 10 goals.
Joachim Löw's last international tournament with Germany as well.
Is it really?
I believe. Yeah, because he said he's not taking 2022. I believe this tournament is his last. Is that a fish?
Well, see, that goes to Ben's point.
Already gone? Joachim Löw? Joachim Löw, who's been in charge since what? I think he took over when after the 2006 World Cup. He's been in that position for like 15 years. I know that he's not taking 2022 World Cup. I don't know if he was backing out before or after this tournament. I thought it was, but
yeah,
I thought it was after. But
that's still listed as him.
Okay.
So yeah, but going to Ben's point, you know, okay, are you going to take this team to the World Cup next year? Why would you not take the same manager? Especially if you win.
I think he's just stepping down. Joachim Löw, he's been in it for 15 years. I think he's just like, I don't know. I don't think it's the Germany like Football Association's choice. I think he's like, all right, I'm
quitting.
Yeah, I've done my time.
I was quitting last year. I'll give you one more year because of COVID.
Yeah.
And now I'm with you. You know what's going to happen, right? In that group of death, France or Germany, one of the two is going to crash out.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be someone like, don't get me wrong. I think I'm in the same boat as you. I don't see France losing. Mbappe's form right now is unreal. But it's just always the way it goes, right? Like, you could see Germany and France tie, and then Germany and Portugal tie, and then someone ties Hungary. You know what I mean? Like, that's the drama that comes out of these tournaments that we love so much.
Right.
Until it's England that do it, and then I hate the tournament, and I'll pretend like it never happened, and then everyone's dead to me for a good 6 weeks. There is nothing worse than England crashing out of a tournament early on. Let me just put that out there.
Yeah.
I'm going to preface that. When England get knocked out of a group stage, I'm grumpy for like 3 weeks. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm so pissed off that I have to watch the games, because I'm not going to not watch. I love the sport. But then I got to know that England should be in this game and they should be winning, right? And I'd rather that just be like 2-3 games tops, not a whole freaking month of football of England pissing me off. So just throwing that out there. You've been warned.
Yeah. You guys have any Euro memories? Remember Ronaldo in 2016 when he made it all the way to the final, fell over in like the 20th minute, got like tackled by a moth. And then
I remember like the, it's just funny, which cause out of like all the international tournaments, I remember like the intros, like the intro music's from like yeah. if they cut to a commercial break, I remember like the cutscenes of like when they would come back into like the TV program and like the music that would be playing like for the Euros and like the World Cup yeah. and stuff like that. Like I can still remember that like to this day. Like Euro yeah. 08 was, I think the, yeah. in terms of Euros, 08 was the first one that I was watching. Yeah, I can remember that stuff like his.
Yeah, Ben, this will take you down memory lane maybe. I remember I just watched on Twitter, I follow some account that posts like old school sort of football clips, and one of them was the Euro 96 like intro that Steve was just talking about, and for like the BBC or whatever, ITV or something, and it was just, they basically just superimposed like a bunch of picture like 1990s football scenes like inside British stadiums like from aerial shots, and that was like top of the notch right then. Yeah, it's been, I don't know, 55 years of hurt, Ben. 55 years without anything.
I'm just, you know what? Football's gone soft, man. Bring back West Germany and the Soviet Union, the 80s, right? Like, that's what football.
You heard it here first. This is what the people, this is what the game needs. Not Florentino Perez in the Super League. We need the Soviet Union back.
In 1968, Italy. Draw Yugoslavia 1-1, and then be replayed where Italy 1-2-0. All right,
give the people what they want.
Yeah, none of this. Let's share the wealth and have games all across Europe and hold hands. Make football amazing,
but bring back the Soviet Union. Got it. other memories: Spain winning 3 titles in a row, basically Euro, World Cup, yeah. Euro.
Yeah.
I think that was
Greece Fernando won Torres in 2004. Yeah.
Greece
and
winning then immediately in 2004.
Went bankrupt.
France, yeah. France won in 2000. In 2000, they won on golden goal.
Yeah, is that the David Trezeguet special? I think yeah. that was the semifinal, or was it the final against Italy?
Was it?
I think it was the final against Italy, right?
Yeah,
that's what I thought it was. I could be wrong. Yeah, but I do remember the goal, and I remember the tournament. And
you remember Balotelli taking his shirt off, doing the flex, yeah, 2012. Yeah, yep. Germany.
I do remember that. I'd like to. I don't know if you guys care about this stuff as much as me, but I'd be curious to see. Are you guys familiar with like the match balls from each tournament?
Love no. it.
That's yes. the. Which one out of the previous? We'll go back to 2000. Which one would be your favorite match ball if you can recall them?
Let me pull them up. So they sell these collector sets
yeah.
of like the mini footballs from World Cups and Euros.
Yeah.
They're like $400 or $500.
So in 2016, you had the Euros in France and the ball was the Bioju. And then I thought 2012, the Tango 12, I really liked that one. Cause that, you know, like the old Tango design from like, you know,
yeah.
the 80s, 90s, even early 2000, they like reused that Tango design, but like made it modern for the 2012 tournament. Really thought that one was sharp. I thought the Europass was awesome from 2008, like the completely silver, it was a whole 100% silver ball, but like it, you know, like a traditional 32 panel ball with white, with the black spots. They used that design. The panels were different, but they used like the black spots on the silver ball to have like that kind of old school 32 traditional looking ball, but like way modern. Euro 2004 ball was kind of ugly. The Rotirio, I didn't really like that one that much. Silver with those like vertical, like perpendicular lines that went through, like topographic Mac, that kind of, or like a,
yeah,
a globe. That one looked kind of funny. And then I can't remember the name of the 2000 match ball, but the 2000 match ball was the last one that they used the Tango design on. So if I had to throw out
the Telestar,
yep.
That's right.
You remember when the Team Geist ball came out and everyone started yeah. spooning it, and they were like, "This is an actual balloon. Like this ball is yeah. not. We should not be using this ball."
The 2008 Euro ball was a Team Geist, but that Team Geist ball had, it was the same design, but it had like dimples. Not dimples. It had like goosebumps. Not
yeah.
But it had like bumps all over it like that.
Best ball of all time, Euro 2000, the Terra Stra.
Really? That doesn't get my vote. I think probably 2000. I really enjoyed 2012's ball. I thought that that was
Tango.
Yeah, the Tango 12.
I thought those were nice. Those were fun to play with too.
Yeah. They had a good ping to them. I've not used like the match balls of like 2008, or I'm sorry, 2004 and like 2000, but in terms of like looks and aesthetics, I really enjoy 2012's.
Dude, I got a training ball from like Peterborough United. Like before the game when I was like 12, they give them out, kick them out or something like that. I got one. It's a Mitra.
Oh, and nice. It is
still, hands down, the best football I have ever kicked. And like really? I can inflate it tomorrow and it will still hold the same amount of air, still moves. Wow. There's nothing like it, man.
I have two miter balls, and one I had gotten when I went over to Scotland, and the miter ball, it just holds water like it's its job. Like it's like, you know, when people talk about like heading like an old school football and how it just would have like the old leather balls, and they would absorb all the water and has so much weight to it, and people are like breaking necks and like just all these injuries. That's what I feel like when I kick this miter ball, and it's like a modern ball.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you have a completely 180 like experience with a miter ball.
Is it a high end one or is it like one of the?
Yeah, it's like a, it's like probably like a $50 ball. So I mean, it's not like a, it's not like the match ball, but it's like, it's not like a, it's like a training. It's like a, that's not. It's a decent ball. It is a decent ball.
I got two favorite balls.
Are they right here on me?
We're gonna leave it. Boom, we're gonna leave it at that. So I do, Alex, have,
do
a,
have a. Do you have a favorite Euro ball though?
Favorite Euro ball? Yeah, I got two.
Brown.
I don't. Did you hear me? I said I have two.
Yeah, we're canceled.
I'm trying to think, what was the one they used in 2008?
That was the Euro Pass, all silver.
Yeah, that's right.
On it all over.
Because that was after, remember, like 2006, they had made the one with whatever, the six panels, and they basically tried to recreate a little
bit.
And
I don't
know
when they made the transition from this. It might sound kind of like finicky, but like in tournaments, like as far as I can back and remember, like in 06 World Cup, all the way up to like 2000 and not 16, Euro 16 was different. But the match ball that was used throughout the group stages in the knockout rounds was the same match ball, but then the final had its own special ball. Same thing with the Champions League. Was the same thing. They'd have a special, like
completely. The FA Cup.
They said the FA Cup.
Yeah. Didn't the FA Cup do that too?
I'm not sure about the FA Cup. This is more like Adidas tournaments. Like the Adidas has always done like the World Cup, the Euros, the Champions League. And then, it, like in 2016, I think is when it started happening, or around that time was when, so the group stages had their own ball. And then as soon as the knockout stages started, that's when like the special ball came in. But then the final still had that same ball from the knockout. It was just kind of like, it kind of took away from like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like it kind of took away from the specialness of like the final. The final had its own ball. It was its own, like, I don't know. It was weird. I was like.
So fun fact, in 1930, the World Cup hosted in Uruguay. Used two separate balls for each half, and they look completely different.
Oh, was there a particular reason? Did I pick up water or something?
Nope, I'm just looking at the picture.
Okay. Ooh. All right, fair play.
What were the ones from 2004? They were like the silver balls. Yeah.
Yeah, the Rotarios. I thought those were kind of ugly, but
they were ugly. But I remember playing with so many of those.
Yeah.
I just remember. Yeah,
those are the last. The last Adidas match ball that had 32 panel design on it. The rest of them started going like the Teamgeist design.
Do you know why they made that switch?
I think just technology, just they had to go in a different direction. See, it's funny because it's like, oh, they, you know, they sell the ball as like, this is, you know, this is the pinnacle of like 100%. This is the closest to a perfect sphere that we can get.
It's,
you know,
round.
Yeah. It's like, okay, cool. You've perfected the ball, but then they come out with like a different panel, not even like a tweaked panel design, a completely different panel design every like two or three, like every international tournament. And it's like, man, like, did you have it that wrong before? Or are you just like selling us stuff because you know we're going to buy it? Like,
well, when they made the switch to the Teamgeist, I felt like the change was to try and get away. It might have been the Europass, actually. I'm thinking of the Europass. They tried to get away from as many, they wanted it to be like one seamless ball, right? Like they tried to get as few stitches as possible in the ball. And yeah, I think the thought process
14 panels to, or I went from 32 panels to I think like 12 or 14 panels. The team guys design
was. That's more than I thought. That's, I mean, it makes sense, right? But like, I thought they were trying to get to as minimalist as possible. And now I think they're kind of just being like, man,
it's gotten away from that now. I think even like, do you guys remember the Jabalanis in 2010?
Yeah.
You guys ever play with one of those?
Cool. Yeah, those were cool.
Those things were volleyballs.
Dude, we had those as a game ball once when we played together, Steve. And I remember like Edgar couldn't understand that the balls had this different lift on them. You remember, like, it was a whole.
We had Biden. Our match balls were those Bidens.
Yeah, but we played in a game with them.
Oh, okay. Perhaps. Whoa. I mean, I remember coming across Jabalanis every now and then, and I remember like when a goal kick, like if you went up for a goal kick, you predicted the ball, you'd go up for like the 50-50 to win it.
Dude, you and could that ball smoke
would
it.
That ball would either. Like when you go to head the ball, that ball would either go like 5 feet above your head at the last second or like hit you in the balls. Like it would just
go
everywhere.
I was taking our goal kicks that year because Josh hit it with his purse. And
shouts out,
I remember, yep, Josh, much love. But I remember like there was a difference in like the knockoff Jabalanis and the authentic ones. Like the knockoffs were just like a football. But then you got like the real deal one and you would just launch it. And it was
They went forever.
Stratosphere.
Yeah, they went forever. No doubt.
That's funny.
It's interesting how they've changed so much.
But. No, I can nerd out on the evolution of World Cup and Euro footballs all day, man. That's good stuff. And if anyone wants to buy me that gift, screw Steve's beer fund. I would like the official collection.
I found out from this segment that you guys really like balls. So I will plug our Twitter page here. Yeah. At Real Swift Kicks on Twitter. I just posted a link to the Euro match balls, a full history going back at least to 1968. So pretty cool there. I do have another interesting piece of history from the Euros, but I'll get to that later. Ben, do you want to kick us off with the segment that we teased so beautifully in our last episode? We called it the segment that doesn't have a name yet. I still don't think it has a name yet, but you can take it away.
I will name it shortly. I'm just gonna real quick plug something that I want everyone to consider, and you guys can vote on this. Mm-hmm. I think we should change the slogan of our show to three mates mucking about a kickabout, and that's the new official slogan unofficially. Right there. There's a nice little plug, but
I don't mind it.
Yeah. It's terrible. I thought of it, while I was using, public facilities the other day. Anyway, so new season, right? We took a week off, because we've earned it and Steve's coming along for the ride. And, instead of, where are they now? We're going to level the playing field and open up with a pub quiz. We did play around with this a couple weeks ago, and it resulted in us having to define a
balloon. Almost went toe-to-toe.
So we we've moved away from the balloons conversation, which you don't need to know, so I'm just going to leave that there. And if you guys really want to know, slide into the DMs. So the way this works is we play two halves because it's a game of two halves. 10 questions, five a half, and winner wins the other person's car. And I'm the quiz master, so it's never my car. So first question, question of the day and the question of the read a book showdown is which player scored the fastest hat trick in Premier League history? Which player scored the fastest hat trick in Premier League?
Alan Shearer.
Bonus points if you can tell me what game it was.
I don't feel confident about this one. For some reason, I thought I'm going to go with Michael Owen, but
We got one for Michael Owen and one for Alan Shearer. The answer is Sadio Mane. In 2 minutes and 56 seconds, he scored a hat trick for Southampton against Aston Villa in 2015.
Wow. Okay. Go on, Mane.
Which player with 653 games made the most Premier League appearances? Which player has the most Premier League appearances with 653 games?
Ryan Giggs.
Did you say Ryan Giggs? What? Little squirrel? There's a squirrel on the show, ladies and gentlemen.
I've never heard that noise before.
Steve's a mute. Steve has lost his voice. What a loser.
I'm going to come in for the steal. Ryan Giggs.
Oh, so I have one for Ryan Giggs. We still can't hear Steve. Steve is, this is a curious situation. Let's turn it into a murder mystery. It was a late night and Steve was on his podcast. A weird noise came across his keyboard. And then all of a sudden,
Steve Ryan Giggs.
Oh, there he is. Oh, and he's back. Mystery solved.
Ryan Giggs.
So question two. Which player with 653 games has made the most Premier League appearances? I have one for Ryan Giggs from Steven Kovac.
And Ryan Giggs from me as well.
Kovac.
I'm going to call it Kovac. Kovac, I'm sorry, Steve. I've offended the entire show now and all the listeners. And just, I'm an idiot. It is what it is. You're both wrong. You guys have negative 3 points now. Gareth Barry is the correct answer.
Oh, that's right.
Idiot.
So stupid.
Question three. I've had the worst quiz of all time. Three players share the record for Premier League red cards. Who are they? You get a point for each player you name. Three players share the record for most Premier League red cards.
Premier League.
Who are they? Maybe think internally so the other person does not steal your answer.
I have one name.
I have two names.
I'm going to go with Tony Adams.
Why are you so sad about that, Steve?
Because I don't have three yet.
All right. So I hear Tony Adams from Alex. Are you omitting the last two? You don't want to just guess two names?
I mean, I have... Steve's going. Yeah, we'll throw out another one. I want to throw out Roy Keane, but I don't think he got that
many. Let's hear it, Steve. What's your answer?
Roy, so do you want me to go all three then?
Yes.
Roy Keane. I don't know if Vinny Jones is in the Premier League era, but I want to put Vinny Jones. I'm putting him down one time for the one time. So Vinny Jones, Roy Keane, and then I'm also going to put down, did Vieira get a whole bunch? We'll put down Tony Adams.
You're going Tony Adams?
Yeah.
All right. Alex, are you going to take any guesses?
Tony Adams, Vidic. Try to think of like a midfielder. You got a bunch of red cards. How about
Joey Barton?
Yeah, Joey Barton. Yeah.
All right. So to go back, Steve, what were your answers?
I had Roy Keane, Vinnie Jones, and Tony Adams.
Which is what you switched from Patrick Vieira. So it's Patrick Vieira, Richard Dunn, and Duncan Ferguson. The correct answer, Patrick Vieira, Richard Dunn, and Duncan Ferguson.
What's the point?
With question number four, with 260 goals, who is the Premier League's all-time top scorer?
That's Alan Shearer.
Yeah. Okay. That's a point each, so it's 1-0. So looking at a different one, three countries have won the World Cup twice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So three countries have won the World Cup twice. Can you name them?
Yes. Brazil is one. Well, oh, you want
twice, only twice.
Only twice.
Oh, okay. Brazil is not one of them.
Correct. That is fair. Good clarification there.
Only twice.
I think I can do it.
Okay, I think I have my two answers.
How many countries are we supposed to get? Three, right?
Yeah. Oh, there's three. Oh, my fault.
Yeah. Three countries that have won it twice. Okay. A point for each, and we're tied 1-1. Go ahead, Steve.
Mine is Argentina.
Yep.
Uruguay.
Okay.
And the third one is escaping me. Come back to me on that one.
Argentina, no. Uruguay, and
sick dude. Nice answer.
There's two options. I think it's Italy.
Okay.
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay. And
I'm going to lock in Italy.
Oh, Italy is locked and loaded.
I'm going to go with West Germany.
That's oddly specific. The answer is no. So both of you scored 2 points on that. We have France. Uruguay and Argentina.
Oh, my God.
The French, the frogs.
How do you forget?
We're so
We could say France.
Why does anyone listen to us? We're so bad.
To feel better about themselves. Plain and simple. So we'll call it at halftime there. And we'll be back for the second half later. We're tied 3-3.
All right, perfect. So here's my story about Euro. In 1992, some of you may have seen a documentary on Netflix. It's called The Summer of 1992, or just Summer of 92. But it's Denmark. About the team Denmark. Yeah, a team that should never have taken part in the tournament itself. It took place in Sweden that year. They finished second in their qualifying group to Yugoslavia. But at the time, there were UN sanctions, and all athletes, really anybody from Yugoslavia, couldn't take part in anything. So 9 days before the opening game, Denmark rather had to basically come together, figure out how they were going to play. Didn't really have any, you know, unifying sort of cohesive team unity or anything, even with the coach. And they went on to win the tournament, beating the 1990 World Cup winners, Germany, in the final. Richard Møller Nielsen was the coach at the time. You know, started off by drawing England 0-0, losing 1-0 to Sweden, and then managed to qualify with a 2-1 win over France in the next game. So, you know, kind of much smaller tournament at that time, so you could get through on apparently one win and one draw. Sometimes that is enough. But just a totally like crazy sort of story of a team that really should never have been in the tournament that ended up going on to win it and, you know, doing the impossible. And really not that long ago, 1992.
I just watched that documentary or watched that film, I guess you could call it. I don't really know what you want to call
it. Yeah, I think it was more a theatrical film.
Yeah. Execution was kind of rough, but I got the gist of what they were trying to tell me.
Yeah, but I think it was Peter Schmeichel, I think, was in that team.
He was,
He was a very young person in that team. And I think at one time he was asked about it, and he was like, you know, the myth is that, you know, Denmark had, whatever, they'd been kicked out, they weren't going to the tournament, so all their players went over to the beach or whatever. And he was like, no, every single one of us were, like, still basically mentally there, like in sort of a tournament kind of mode, and that's what was able to get them going and be able to pull off what they did. So it's pretty amazing. But yeah, 1992, probably the last, not really the last time we saw a crazy thing happen. I mean, Greece shocked the world really in 2004 when they won. So that's what I was saying earlier, where I think this tournament, just something about it, just produces like some crazy results here and there.
Magical.
And, you know, every once in a while, you know, yeah, Germany comes through and they win it. France comes through and they win it. But even through that, there's always a little bit of something that's popping up, you know, in the later stages that you just wouldn't really expect. So I'm looking forward to this summer, man. I'm
100%
really pumped for it. Other than that, my only thing I was looking at was, what would be your England starting 11?
Oh, bro.
Goalkeepers.
I'm here for it. But I want to go second.
Dean Henderson, Jordan Pickford, or Sam Johnstone from the recently relegated West Brom.
I cut them all.
Who would you put in goal?
Do a sweeper keeper with Wayne Rooney. Just throwing it out there. Bring him back.
Pickford's my pick. In goal.
Yeah, why do you hate Pickford, Alex?
I just picked him.
He's a sad Macum.
That's too bad for you.
I think it'd be easy to keep up if you went like position and then name the names.
Yeah, I'm good with that. I think I'm on board with Steve on this one. I think Pickford's the right man for the job. Dean Henderson's a joke. The other guy's been relegated. Let's keep it with Pickford. He's got some experience. He played pretty well in the last World Cup too.
Right back. Who do we, Alex, give us our options at right back.
At right back, you got about half the squad. Well, I'll just name the entire back line. So you got Ben Chilwell, Connor Cody from Wolves, never going to start. Reece James, from Chelsea, Harry Maguire if he's fit from United, Tyrone Mings from Villa looked shocking in some of these.
I'm gonna forget some of these.
Yeah, Luke Shaw from United, John Stones from City, Kieran Trippier, recent La Liga winner, Kyle Walker from Man City, Ben White from Brighton and Hove Albion, who did replace Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I don't think Harry Maguire is fit, so Harry Maguire is not getting my vote. Had he been fit, this is a different answer, but I'm going is he?
Yeah, he is well fit.
I like Cody, but John Stones is getting picked for me. And he's getting paired with, I don't mind Mings, but I think I like Cody a bit more. So I'm gonna go with Cody. Cody and Stones in the middle. And then I am a big fan of Kieran Trippier's like delivery, his set piece and like just crossing and dead ball ability, I think is like underrated. So Kieran Trippier starts as well for me. And who did we have at left back? What was the out? Luke Shaw.
Basically Luke Shaw, Ben Chilwell. Yeah, that's probably about really all I got.
Luke Shaw had quite a season, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put Shaw in there.
I think he's the overwhelming favorite for everybody.
I think I'll put Shaw in there.
Yeah, right back is, you know, it's Kyle Walker, Reece James.
I really like Kyle Walker, but I think Kyle Walker's getting a little bit past it now.
Mm-hmm. And then Ben White. We have a Sonny Brighton player.
So for me, I like Reece James at right back. Harry Maguire scored in his last appearance for England last week, by the way. So he's back and in form. Bro, such a hater. Luke Shaw, obviously, and then Mings at center back with Harry Maguire, and I think that's an unstoppable back four. I like Reece James. I think he's a workhorse. He can also deliver a good ball, but he's also a big guy. You know what I mean? Like he's a big player, physical, hard to get around.
Are we doing a 4-3-3?
I'm here for a 4-3-3. I'm just
okay. All right, so let's go through the middle. Oh wait, no, you haven't done yours, Alex. My bad.
Yeah, well, I would go with Kyle Walker. I think the man's a unit. Luke Shaw, John Stones, and Harry Maguire in the center.
Okay.
All right. So for the midfield, only a few to pick from. Jude Bellingham plays at Borussia Dortmund. Don't really see him a lot, but he has had a pretty decent run of form. Jordan Henderson from Liverpool, Mason Mount from Chelsea, Calvin Phillips from Leeds, and Declan Rice.
Oh,
I mean, Henderson's a shoe-in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know the playing styles of like I'm familiar with like the position and like what kind of roles that they kind of play in their teams, Declan Rice and Calvin Phillips.
Yeah.
And to me, they're kind of similar.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting because I feel like some of the players that are listed as forwards are really midfielders to me.
You know, that's what I'm telling you. It's a hybrid, man. Like,
yeah. Jack Grealish. Like, yeah.
That's a tough one. I don't know Jude well enough to be able to like,
Mount, I think Mason Mount's pretty standalone out of this group.
All right, to be honest. Mount, Hendo, and then who?
I don't know. Depends on the day. Who cares?
Today's the day.
Yeah. Alexander, what's the guy's name that can't play anymore because he got hurt, allegedly?
Trent Alexander-Arnold's coming back.
They put him in the squad. He was like, I'm hurt. Yeah, whatever. I don't know. I'm going to say Jude Bellingham because I know the least about him. I just Declan
17 years old, so
yeah, love it.
I'm going to my guns. I'm putting Calvin Phillips in there.
I feel like he suits those other two that we just talked about. Declan Rice is a very central player, and I think Jordan Henderson is that central player on that team or in that in that midfield.
Yeah. And then Mount's a little bit higher. I would probably put like
Mount and Phillips out wide.
No, I put Mount up top and then two kind of recessed in
Hendo. Is that behind him?
Yeah, Hendo and Calvin Phillips behind him.
And then you want your
attackers,
right?
Yeah, and then when we're going to the top three. But Alex, you go.
Alex first.
I think I'd put Declan Rice with Mason Mount and Phil Foden.
Whoa, that's not even a – that's dude, not even a – you just cheated.
People.
You can't pull from other pots.
You know what? Peter Schmeichel in goal.
Yeah.
doing it.
Gaz is coming. Gaz is coming back.
Gaz is back. And then there's about 10,000 forwards. So we got Dominic Calvert-Lewin from Everton, Phil Foden, my midfielder for Manchester City, Jack Grealish from Villa, Harry Kane, Ben's arch nemesis, Marcus Rashford from United, Saka from Arsenal, Jadon Sancho from Dortmund, Raheem Sterling from City.
That's such a fire
squad. I already got overwhelmed there. I need to like hear that again almost.
Just play all of them and bench everyone else. Don't even play the back
four. Right. And starting as your back four, it's like Dominic a hockey line. Phil Foden.
Holy smokes. I think Kane has to start. I think Kane has to play.
He's your captain. Yeah. He likely will.
I mean, I think Hendo could get the armband if Kane wasn't there. I would have no problem in giving it to Hendo. That's tough. I've
got a bit of a stretch because I wouldn't play Harry Kane over three people here. And I know I get it. I get it, right? Like, I know, right? I get it. But like, let me ask you guys this honestly. You're gonna take Rashford or Kane? Who are you taking?
I'm taking Harry Kane.
You're liar. Kane. You're both liars.
I'm not.
I would go Jack Grealish on one side, Rashford on the other side, and Sancho on the Rashford in the middle and Sancho on the other side.
Phil Foden is
starting midfield.
He's coming on for me.
Yeah, he would come on. He would have some part to play in the game.
Imagine tired legs with that rapid pace, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is a tough one. I don't know. See, the same thing too is like, obviously we've all heard about Jadon Sancho this past 2 years. I don't know his playing style well enough or like what he does. I think he's just like a quick, like tricky dribbler. That's like my impression of him. But like past that, I don't know what his goal contributions are. I don't know really much about him at all. I like Sterling, but Sterling's not been on form.
I'm surprised he got picked, to be honest.
I am too.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You need midfielders. And granted, these strikers, you know, could play both. Like Phil Foden could play both. Jack Grealish could play both, really. Like, you know what I mean? And Rashford's done midfield work before as well. Saka, I feel like, could do both. But I just feel like Sterling didn't make the quality of this team, yeah, in my opinion. But you never know. Watch, he'll probably start now.
I think Gareth Southgate really, really likes Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
He's picked him for a lot in the past, and I think that holds some weight. Even if he had a bit of a not so hot season this year, I think he having Southgate in charge helped him
out. I'm just saying, like, who's in better form, Sterling or what's his name? Sorry,
Foden.
No, I was just like speaking it, and then it went away. Who's in better form, Sterling or Jesse Lingard?
Right. Right, second highest scorer in the Premier League, second highest scoring British person in the Premier League, didn't get picked.
That's wild to me. And he's in form. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's playing for something right now. And, you know,
yeah,
pretty good. But, like,
yeah.
And
yeah,
again, the argument is he's just better than a bench player, for the record.
Yeah. That's a tough one. We'll see if someone gets hurt between now and the start of the Euros. Or what, is it too late now? Is it too late for people to –
Yeah, it's too late.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry, J Links.
Yeah. You cut.
I'm going with, I think Jack Grealish is probably the best person to put on an England shirt in the past 6 years. He would start Harry Kane, and I think you play Sancho. He's pretty popular with the fans. I think that's like it's an up and coming choice, if you will. Pick the 21-year-old, but I think that Sancho would be a nice sort of mix of youth go along there with Phil Foden, Mason Mount, packing him behind in the midfield as
Rashford,
well.
Rashford, Kane, Grealish, that's fine.
I think Rashford comes on late. That's it.
I'd rather have him start personally, but I mean, that's just me.
Agreed. I think Rashford is one of those players that if he can't start, he doesn't do well coming on, getting into the mix of things. He needs the time to get into it. But that being said, like Rashford's current form, and don't get me wrong, Harry Kane is what, the Golden Boot winner for Prem? There's something to be said there, right? Like,
I think Rashford.
There's something to be said there, but you still haven't picked him.
No, he's trash. Right. I think Rashford
benched the captain.
Yeah, it's all PKs, man. All he does is score penalties. He doesn't score anything.
Captain
else.
Of the national team. What? Top goal scorer this last season?
Score. It's an inside job. Just saying. I know somebody. But no, I think in all seriousness, I could see him being left out for Phil Foden just with the current, you know what I mean, dynamics of what these players have been doing in their leagues. And I could see Rashford sitting the bench a lot of this tournament if he doesn't perform early on.
Yeah, 100%. All right, so that's the England team. We figured that out. Next time around, we'll figure out the Scotland team. We'll all do some research and maybe have watched the Scotland game by that point. And yeah, we'll go through that. Steve will bring forth the knowledge that a lot of us don't have.
French teams.
But to be fair, I think they've got... Yeah, French team would be fun as well to go through. But we're definitely going to be covering this tournament as much as possible. And
we'll be bringing
basically just because we're going to be sitting in front of our... Yeah. Yeah, we're just going to be sitting in front of our TV and watching all these games. So, all right, Ben, I believe it's the second half of the segment that has no name.
We're tied 3-3. Three-all. Okay. All right, second half is resuming. With 202 clean sheets, which goalkeeper has the best record in Premier League? With 202 clean sheets, which goalkeeper has the best record in the Premier League?
I have mine.
Okay, Alex.
I have a controversial one.
Alex, it's your honor. Why don't you kick us off here?
Fabian Barthez.
Okay, there's one. Are you laughing while you're saying that?
Yeah, he looks like he is.
No.
All right, Steve, your answer.
I'm gonna get this wrong, but I'm gonna go David Seaman.
David Seaman. That's a fun story. When David Seaman got signed by Arsenal, he threw a house party at his house because he was at Peterborough United, and he smashed a window with his hand and had to go to the hospital. The answer is not David Seaman. The answer is Peter Cech.
Fun story about David Seaman. There was a headline from, I believe it was 1998, but it was Keegan fills Schmeichel's gap with Seaman.
You say right, the answer to these questions, and it's just like, man, I feel like if I thought about that a little bit longer, that should have came to my head. But
Steve is requesting for an awkward pause, so I will insert an awkward pause. Which three players shared the Premier League Golden Boot in 2018 and 19? A point for everyone. So 2018, 2019, the Golden Boot was shared by three players. Who are they? Alex went first last time. So, Steve, you're going to be up after a long pause.
This is 18, 19. I want to put, this is not my answer, but I want to put like Mane, Firmino, and like Mo Salah. It's like, but obviously they wouldn't have scored all them goals.
Them goals?
Oh, 18, 19. I don't think Vards was tied with anybody. 18, 19. I'm just going to throw some names out here. We're going to go Bobby Firmino, Jamie Vardy, and Aubameyang.
Okay, Alex.
I was gonna go Harry Kane.
Idiot.
Mo Salah. And.
Oh, not Bobby Firmino. I wanted fucking Mane.
Mane. Yeah.
Mane.
Yeah. Mane Salah, is one of the minute because
This is separating the boys from the men here. All right, Mane, Salah, and Aubameyang, or whatever his name is. So, Steve, you do take 1 point.
Okay.
So that changes the score to 6-5. Okay.
I've done better there.
Next question. The fastest goal scored in Premier League history came in 7.69 seconds. Who scored it? The fastest goal scored in Premier League history came in 7.69 seconds. Who scored it?
If it's Mane, I'm going to throw chairs. He scores the fastest hat trick, and then he scores also the fastest Premier League goal. That'd be mad. But I don't think it's Mane.
I think it's Ben on his wedding night.
Bro, I almost said when I asked this question, Alex, no. So I've just deducted a point from Alex for insulting me.
Yeah, 5-5.
It's quickly become the lowest score game. Rip on Ben for 20 minutes.
I don't think I know the answer to this one.
Quickest goal in Premier League history.
Correct. Right? It was scored against Watford in the 2018-19 season. It was a Southampton player. While they think, I will bring this ad to you. This episode was brought to you by Extends. As we extend the pause before they answer. Alex, you're up.
Pulling up a blank here.
I'm gonna go.
No answer.
I don't even think he was there yet in 18-19, but no, he wasn't. Who was the winger for Southampton? Was it Redman? It's
Redman.
Nathan Redman, but he's like a left back now. I'm struggling with this one. I don't know.
So the answer is not Shane Short, but it is Shane Long. You both
never would have got that.
Nope, that's okay because I didn't even know who that was either.
Taking a long time.
He's from New Zealand. No, is he Irish? But anyway,
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
It's not. Where are they now?
Yeah, right.
There have been. I'm not asking that question because I couldn't answer that question even if I had a dictionary in front of me.
Wait, can you just try us?
Nope. All right, sure. You ready?
Yeah, Steve, hit us.
Who thinks he's going to beat the...
Is this bonus points if we get it?
For you, yes. Alex, no.
Okay, got it.
This counts as 2 for Steve. Actually, it would... Never mind, whatever. I'm asking the question. There have been 2 World Cup trophies.
Okay.
What was the name of the first?
You're right.
Jules Rimet.
Is he right? Doesn't matter because you're not getting points anyway, so... I don't know the answer. I don't even want to give you a guess because I don't have anything to guess.
All right, so Alex takes a point.
What? And,
well done, Alex. Play it there. Yep. And we're back to 7 serving 5.
What? You just said he couldn't get points. How did he just get a point? And you deducted another point.
I said he couldn't get 2 points. English rock star Elton John was twice the owner of which football club?
Watford.
Did he get it right?
Yep.
Let him answer first.
Yep. 7-6. Shots fired, bro. Broski. Throwing down. So 7-6. Okay. That's a little bizarre. I don't know what to say to that. Okay.
Read the next question.
Yep. That's the correct answer. The next question, as we were sitting at 7-6 with 2 questions to go. Which outfield player, meaning not a goalkeeper, appeared in the Champions League final in 3 different decades? Which outfield player, not a goalkeeper, appeared in the Champions League final in 3 different decades?
Champions League, not the European Cup?
Champions League.
Is it Andre Pirlo?
I have 1 for Andre Pirlo.
It has to be a Premier League player.
Was it a Premier League player? Is that what you said?
I will leave the question as it is.
What's the question?
Which outfield player appeared in the Champions League final in 3 different decades?
I just want to make sure, like, you didn't say Premier League in there, because I'm gonna feel silly. Yeah, I'm sticking with Andre Pirlo.
Somehow, Fernando Torres.
You were both wrong. The correct answer is Ryan Giggs.
Huh. 3?
Of course.
What? Yep.
90s, yep. 2010s.
Tens.
Classic. Cool, dude.
All right, 7-6 going into the final question. It'll get better. Which team was the first from the UK to win the European Cup? Which team was the Celtic. First from the UK to win the European Cup? I've won for Celtic.
It was Celtic.
May 25th, 1967.
Okay, the answer is Celtic, and you both get a point. So,
I feel like Steve wins.
All right, fine. We'll go down to one more.
He got the date.
Here's, we'll call it a tie.
Sudden death. 2-1 against Inter Milan in Lisbon.
Nerd.
If your team wins the Champions League, you're not going to forget that stuff.
I mean, it was the last time they won a game, I think, right? Is that correct?
Okay, next question.
Last question to finish them all. Give me a second because I'm looking at my question bank. The record number of World Cup goals is 16, scored by who?
Miroslav Klose.
All right, that takes the cake. Alex, that was too fast. I'm sorry, you're out. Steve takes the win, and we don't have to talk about the balloon fiasco. Moving forward, so the Read a Book Award goes to Alex tonight. Thank you, Alex.
Alex, did you know the closer question?
You were winning.
I would have gotten there eventually, but yeah.
We brought in closer to be the closer. Yep. And that's the end of my puns because that was terrible. Yo, guys.
I believe that's the
guys.
Unless you have one more thing, that's the end of the podcast.
Too. You guys don't want to do trash takes?
Well, opening day of fixtures.
We already did.
Opening day fixtures. Yeah. Opening match day 1 of 3 starts on Friday, June 11th, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Be there. Turkey versus Italy.
Okay. Well, are we doing trash takes just for this one then? Because that's the first day. Or that's not the first day.
I was going to look at match day 1 of 3 and pick one.
Oh, okay. I got you. Okay. That's cool with me. Croatia beats England 1-0.
And Steve's canceled.
Watch, listeners, if this comes true.
North Macedonia ties Austria.
Okay.
On Sunday.
I'm looking at Scotland to beat the Czech Republic.
In the first 3 days? When's that one? That's the fourth day.
That one is on my first 1 of 3 match days. Match day 1 of 3. Which will also be before the next episode comes out. So group stage match day 1 of 3. So you're taking Croatia over England, hater. North Macedonia over Austria. Interesting.
Tied. And then
this genius. Tied. Oh, that was a draw. So North Macedonia 0, Austria 0. And then this genius is taking Scotland over Czech Republic. So that's that.
Nice.
So, guys, that's the close of another beautiful episode. I just want to take a moment and just say, guys, we just finished season 1.5. We'll call it 1.5, the reboot, the relaunch of the Swift Kick podcast. I want to thank Alex and Steve. I'm just going to have an emotional moment here. You guys have made the game more interesting for me. I love the sport. You guys make it better. Steve, we're glad you're on the team. Alex? Yep. All right. And that's where we're going to leave it. So this is about us. This isn't about you. This is about us. We're here for ourselves. So thank you for listening. Ta-ta for now. Ricky Ricardo. Ricardo.